putting yourself in that unknown territory, that uncomfortable zone, it's okay to still feel uncomfortable while you're doing it, but you still got to do it, and you get the benefits and payoffs from having done it. Don't necessarily expect that you'll get on the stage and you'll be like the most amazing presenter that ever lived. You may well be, but the main thing is that you do it and overcome any sort of fear and nerves or whatever that you might have.
Welcome to the Speaker Driven Business Podcast for the entrepreneurs, the subject matter experts, and the difference makers who want to unlock the power of speaking driven strategies to accelerate impact, influence, and revenue. I'm your host, Jacqueline Nagel, and this is the place for straight talking, easy to implement 20 minute or less business speaking and communications insights and lessons, which will help you break through from unheard of to in demand. Let's go. Right from the start of building out the Speaker Driven Business Podcast, I knew that I didn't want it to be 100% solo episodes. It is so important to me that I get as much as I know about techniques, tips, training, education when it comes to speaking, communication, and pitching. It's so important to me to get that into the hands of as many people as possible. But I also knew right from the start that we'd have a few months of a really hard run at it, and then I wanted to be able to bring to you conversations and insights and perspectives. Now, some of those will simply be me changing it up a little, speaking into what I've observed through the conferences. We're going to so many speaking conferences this year around the world, into the conferences we've gone to, the speakers we've been witness to, and actually bring back to you my insights, my thoughts, my, you know, how does this shape what we do next, all of that sort of stuff. The second type of conversation we wanted to bring to you as part of this, like, I guess, creating a little bit of, you know, pause and breathe and looking at those sorts of things, is actually bringing to you stories and excerpts from the incredible speakers that we have in our world who've gone on to do something quite extraordinary. And the third type of conversation I want to be able to bring to you is those that come directly out of the programs we're running. So we run a lot of programs where there is a lot of in-program content created, and sometimes those are conversations that we want to share with more people. So the first of those conversations is coming your way today to give you some room to breathe as we start this 2024. And this conversation is from the Speak Like TED program, which is actually kicking off in late January 2024. It is still open for enrollment and registration, but this is a conversation that we pre-recorded with Sophie Scott. Sophie Scott is an Australian Broadcasting Corporation journalist who transitioned out of that role just over a year ago to pursue professional speaking and commentating as a career. Now, she has done incredibly well at building on strong foundations and has also delivered her first TEDx talk. So this conversation was actually to be recorded as her experience on the TEDx stage. But there is so much more that got encompassed, and there is so much more that we talked about, that I did ask her at the end of that conversation if it would be okay if we actually release this as a very quickly put together podcast episode to go out to you as soon as possible. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let us know what you think. So right now, I'd love to welcome Sophie Scott to our next conversation in the Speak Like TED series. And I'm really excited about Sophie joining us today. Sophie, welcome.
Thank you, Jacqueline. Thank you for having me.
That's my pleasure, my absolute pleasure, especially as I can't think of a better way to launch the year than these conversations. So Sophie, before we get actually moving into kind of the deeper stuff and unpacking a little bit, just want to run through some logistics for people. Who is Sophie Scott and how have you come to be where you are now, just in sort of 60 seconds?
Sure. So my main career was as a TV reporter working for ABC, specializing in health and science. And as well as doing that, I do a lot of speaking and hosting events in the health space. And earlier last year now, I left ABC to focus on the health side of things 100% of the time. So I'm doing a lot more speaking, a lot more hosting of events, and a lot more writing. And yeah, so it's great.
Amazing. And you have actually built a very quick following. I mean, that is a shift that you obviously built on a foundation that you already had, but I've noticed it actually lifting a lot more in this last 12 to 18 months. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you. It's something that if you put the right energy into it and you have a good reason for doing it, So you don't see it as a hassle or something extra just on your to-do list. For me, growing my social media in the health space and the sort of emotional well-being space was very deliberate, and I really enjoy doing it actually. So some people see it as a bit of a chore. Yes. For me, I really enjoy that side of this business and connecting with people that you wouldn't never otherwise connect with.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something I've had to actually adjust to because I've always created businesses behind the scenes. And it's only in the last few months I've gone, actually, you know what? We need to embrace this and we need to go there. And that, what you're talking about, that connection, the extension of connection is quite extraordinary. So, Sophie, when did you actually deliver your TEDx talk? That's what we're here to talk about today.
Yeah, sure. So it was actually halfway through last year at the end of June 2022.
Okay, amazing. And what was the topic? What was the specific topic?
So I'd written a lot about burnout. So the general topic was burnout and burnout recovery. And we can talk about how the topic evolved a little bit, but that was generally the overarching theme.
Yeah, incredible. And being 2023, was it virtual or was it live?
So luckily, it was in person. And it was in the Blue Mountains, which is just outside Sydney. It was pretty cold, I've got to say. So I'm rugged up
June in the
on
Blue Mountains,
stage.
yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I was lucky that we could do it in person. And it's always a great vibe when you can be in a room full of people.
Absolutely. And I think during those few years that we had, I'm not going to use the words around it, those few years that we all experienced, I think we adjusted to not having that in-room connection. But I think also too, now we're a year into, or now almost 2 years into actually being able to move freely, it's like there is nothing that beats that. Absolutely nothing that beats that.
Exactly. Yeah, it's nothing like being in a room full of people who are really engaged and listening to what you're saying, and you get that immediate feedback from the audience.
Yeah.
And that's something we can talk about, particularly with a TED talk. So, yeah, I'm interested to unpack that with you.
Incredible. I'm looking forward to doing that actually because there is a different way it plays with a TEDx talk. So, really curious about unpacking that. Key question that most people want to know before they go through the experience, did you actually make the platform where you picked up with your video?
Yes, I was. So it is on the YouTube, the TEDx YouTube channel, which is
Fantastic.
great. And so when you do one, there's no guarantee that you'll get on that YouTube channel, but obviously that's where you get a lot more exposure. So luckily mine is, which is great.
And did you do you want to disclose the views to date or?
Yeah, sure. No, I think it's up to about 8,000 views. Look, it hasn't gone viral or gone gangbusters, but look, I'm happy with that. I'd probably like it to have a few more views than that. But at the end of the day, you know, if a couple of people watch it and they find it of value, that's almost more important to me than it's going viral and for the sake of it.
Yeah, it's interesting because some of the conversations we're having in this series range from less views than you've got, but really happy with the engagement he's got out of that, right through to someone who's actually had millions of views and wish he'd never made the platform. So it's actually, and that's one of the things that I'm discovering. Yeah, I'm discovering it's actually not about the views, which is an
Yeah, so
obsession before the process.
be careful of what you wish for sometimes. So no, look, I'm happy with that, with the level of views. I think we can be, you know, obviously it's good to look at data. It's good to look at I always look at the insights for my social media, but at the end of the day, you don't want to be too driven by that. You want to feel like you're doing a good job, you're connecting with the people that you want to connect with, and that it's serving you and serving the audience that you're trying to connect with. That's the key. It's always all about the audience and what's in it for them.
Yeah, absolutely. What was your original motivation for pursuing a TED Talk?
So one of the things that I really wanted to focus on when I left my full-time job and started to do a lot more speaking was really sort of throwing myself headfirst into those experiences that really are outside your comfort zone. You
Yeah.
know, I've presented and I've hosted conferences to, you know, like 5 and 10,000 people in the audience. So, which I liked doing, and I'm used to live television where, you know, hundreds and thousands of people can be watching. But I think it's always good to be looking for new challenges. So for me, doing a TEDx talk was just was a different type of challenge and a new
Yeah.
challenge. So I was definitely keen to do it, and it was one of the things that I put on my list for last year. It did come around pretty quickly, so it is a bit sometimes be careful what you wish for.
Now
But you can get it, and then you're like, oh, now I've got to actually do it.
I've got to deliver and
Yeah.
exceed and all that sort of stuff. Were you approached then, or did you go through a pitch process?
No, I was actually approached, and again, it's a really good, you know, experience to think about. The sort of material that you're putting out is what people see you as an expert in. So I write a lot on LinkedIn about, you know, the science of emotional well-being and burnout and things like that. And so one of the curator of the TEDx Katoomba talk, he contacted me via LinkedIn and said, oh, I'm putting together a program. And I really want to put you on the program for this TEDx event. And so I was like, yeah, that sounds amazing. Sign me up. So I was very, very keen. And when I got that invitation, and I had a Zoom meeting with him to start with, just to sort of get a sense of how it would work.
Yeah.
And I think having that meeting with him reassured me that he was really trying to curate a very interesting program.
Yeah.
He actually delivers workshops on burnout as well. So he was a really good person to have as a curator and a coach for that process, because he knew the content as well as a bit about presenting as well. So he was, from a content point of view, probably the perfect person.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for me to be the curator of the TEDx program. So yeah, it was a great invitation to get and one that I really jumped at.
Yeah, incredible. So you also mentioned already that the topic broadly was burnout. And so do you want to walk through, let's unpack how it evolved. Like, what did you start out with? Where did it iterate to? And what did it end up being?
So the topic really started off just being burnout recovery. And because I've got a background as a journalist and a science journalist, I guess my goal was to sort of educate the audience about burnout, about what it is, about how you can recover from it. But I think what the way it evolved is we wanted to tell my story, but to add in more content that was going to be relevant to a broader audience. So we wanted to add in more storytelling. We wanted to add in more sort of emotional, you know, moments and highs and lows, and probably lose a little bit of the educational content. So cut that back a little bit. And I think what it really evolved to was the concept of that you can get burnt out even in a job that you really enjoy. Well, you don't have to be in a job that you hate to get burnt out. And I think that was an important message, because that means that you're potentially reaching people who might be in a really good job but are feeling burnt out. And they're like, oh, yeah, that sounds just like me, rather than there's probably a smaller number of people who are in a job that they really hate and they're feeling burnt out.
Yeah, I love that they're stretching out of it. So storytelling to me is really important. You're a journalist, you know how important that is. Storytelling is really important, but actually the storytelling was on purpose to broaden that appeal, wasn't it? It was actually bringing in those elements that could broaden who bought into this.
And also, I think we fleshed out as well the storytelling aspect of my job and the parts of it that I really enjoyed, because we wanted to convey to the audience that I really loved my job, you know, and I had some amazing moments in that job. And I went through a couple of the patient case studies that really stayed with me, the families that I met and the people who I was able to tell their story to a really, you know, worldwide audience. And so those are the sort of interactions with people that you never really forget. And it's also what made the job so rewarding in a lot of ways. So that was like the good side. And then the flip side was, you know, ending up in burnout. And then we went into how that, you know, impacts you and how I sort of found a way through it. But it was a really good experience in terms of thinking about how you could add in more emotional moments by bringing in, you know, the human element in terms of the patients that I'd come into contact with over the years.
Yeah. So when it comes to, if you think about, you're a journalist by profession, you are experienced in speaking, emceeing, hosting events, things like that. What is the thing that you had to really adjust to? What was it that you resisted the most in the process?
So the thing that I had to adjust to, well, there was probably a couple. One is, you know, reducing the amount of educational content and the amount of information that was in there for the audience. Your audience is, it's good to have, you know, education and facts and figures, but they can only absorb a certain amount, and after a while it just sort of washes over them. So whereas in journalism, it's all about the facts, it's all about the information. You wrap it up with storytelling, but that's the core of what you're doing, is trying to convey important facts and information to the audience. So reducing down the storytelling. But then I think the biggest lessons were, and still remain for me, to lose the habits of 25 years as a broadcast journalist in terms of the presentation style.
Yes.
So, you know, TV presenting, for a start, you would never use your hands like this on television. Yeah. You're trained to, you always have to have your hands down, out of sight, not using them at all. And that's sort of the opposite of when you're presenting on stage. You want to use your hands. You want to use, and even on a webinar, you need to see your hands and use them. So that's one thing. And then also, I think with the way I deliver material as well, from a vocal point of view, you know, 25 years of doing daily, you know, TV scripts, and it's a very different way of presenting to an audience. You need to be, and this is what I'm learning, and I've, you know, one of the biggest lessons that I've learned from not just doing the TED talk, but presenting at conferences and, you know, and to workplaces generally, is that you're up there, but particularly when you're on a stage, I think the TEDx thing is and this is probably my biggest takeaway from being on the stage, was that you need to practice being on a stage. You know, I practice that talk over and over and over again to my dog, to my neighbors, to groups of people. But it's a very different thing when you actually step foot on that stage. And if I could go back and do anything again, I would just, you know, I knew the content really well. I memorized it all and I was confident and I knew it all. And even though I'd practiced the talk so many times, I hadn't got onto a stage and practiced in front of people.
It's one of the foundational philosophies we have in Astrology here, is because we call it the first five friendly stages, because until you get in the arena and you're actually on a stage and in front of people, the most glorious speeches may actually fail. And that's, we actually have built a specific strategy around that for our clients. So they're the things that you learn, and you realize that you wanted to, you would have rather to have practiced on a stage, and that's the only thing you would change. What else did you love about the process? So there's obviously a lot involved. What did you love about the process of going through this experience from start to finish?
So I think one of the things I loved was working with someone on developing a speech.
Yes.
You know, my view is two heads are generally better than one. And so working with the curator and having his input into the talk, I really enjoyed that process. Yeah. He was very encouraging and very, you know, made you feel good about where the talk was up to. But I think his input made it better. Yeah. So I think that was something that was definitely great. You know, one of the biggest learnings for me was putting yourself in those uncomfortable positions, like stepping onto a stage to do a TEDx talk. You know, that's how we grow, by stepping onto those uncomfortable positions. But what I learned was you still feel uncomfortable in the moment. It's not like you step onto that stage and like, oh, I've got it. This feels like freeze. You know, like, it's not necessarily, you know, I actually felt quite nervous when I was doing the talk, and so I had a few of the physical symptoms of nerves, but I knew that the audience wouldn't have any idea that that was how I was feeling. Yes. And so what I did was I said to myself, I really grounded myself on my feet on the stage and just, you know, took some deep breaths and then just smiled and just kept going. And so that was a good lesson for me about how, you know, you've got to be physically very grounded. Yeah. And the audience really doesn't know, you know, how you're feeling. The most important thing is that you sort of sail through any little hiccups, but that, you know, putting yourself in that unknown territory, that uncomfortable zone. And it's okay to still feel uncomfortable while you're doing it, but you still got to do it, and you get the benefits and payoffs from having done it. So that's probably the biggest lesson, that don't necessarily expect that you'll get on the stage and you'll be like, you know, the most amazing presenter that ever lived. You may well be, but the main thing is that you do it.
Yeah.
The main thing is that you do it and overcome any sort of fear and nerves or whatever that you might have, because the audience, they don't really care about that. They just want to hear what you have to say, and they're just thinking, what's in it for them?
Absolutely.
You know, all motivated by our own self-interest. Yep. You know, psychology, it's called the spotlight effect. We're thinking about what is in this for me, you know, so not thinking about, oh, gee, she's nervous or she didn't get that word right. They're thinking about, is there something in this that I can relate to and that I need to know? And so I think when you keep that in mind, it helps you too, because you think, well, I'm just here to deliver value to this audience. Yeah. That's my goal.
It's interesting, because one of the things that I spent a lot of time deconstructing great speakers before moving into this space. And I was very firm and rigid. The way that I got taught was almost like the speaking version of what you're talking about with journalism. You move this way, you stand here on the stage, you say these words, you do these actions. Like, it was very prescriptive. And what I learned watching thousands of speakers was, in both live and online, was, actually, if your content is amazing, I don't even care if actually you're breaking out in a sweat that I can see. You know, I actually don't care. We had somebody we listened to in the US, and I was really looking forward to her. We went to a conference, opening keynote speaker, and she walked up to a lectern and she opened up notes and she read word for word. Now, in my previous experience, I would have been like, don't ever read, don't ever do this, don't ever do that. But what she did in reading it, was she made it sound like she was reading it. You felt as though she was reading it because this was so important that she didn't want to miss anything.
She didn't miss, exactly. So it really worked for her. And the content sounds like it was so amazing that everyone would have been hanging on every word that she said.
Yeah. And that's why I say to people all the time, content first, right? Content first.
Great advice.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, there's no, You don't want that cookie cutter approach where everyone sounds the same and looks the same, and that's not interesting to the audience if they feel like they've seen it all before. And almost if you're a bit too polished, you know, there's a great concept called like the first circle, which I learned subsequent to doing, you know, after I did the TEDx talk. One of my sons is an actor and he has just finished at NIDA. And so he did lots of amazing work himself on voice and on how to get up on stage and be an amazing actor. And so one of the things that he taught me was the concept of the second circle or the three circles. So the first circle is very much, I think, someone like, you know, Tony Robbins. So really over the top, almost a little bit aggressive and in your face and rah, rah, rah. And then the second circle is, you know, you're outgoing, but you're listening and you're engaging with the audience, you're getting their feedback and you're reacting to it. And this is where we want to be as a presenter. You don't want to be necessarily in that first circle, which was just over the top. And then the third circle is very, you know, closed off and closed body language and not giving much and a quiet voice and da, da, da. So I love that concept of the circle of trying to find where you sit in that second circle. And that's why there's no, you know, as long as you can find a spot somewhere in that second circle and not be that cookie cutter approach to speaking, it's definitely going to be great for people.
Yeah, absolutely. What did you love about the actual speech and the way that it ended up? What are the things that really got your personal attention that you love and you felt it, but also to what people responded with?
I think what people really responded with was the concept that I was trying to get across about the body keeps score. So even though cognitively we might think we can work really long hours and flog ourselves and overwork, your body has other ideas and your body will say enough is enough. And so I think the feedback that I got from people was that they really understood that concept through my talk. And that was something that was important to me that I get across, that it's not a thing that you can't really think your way out of burnout. You can't just think, oh, I'll be fine. And I'll just keep doing what I've been doing. The body says, actually, no, you won't. You know, you have to take a break and you're going to have to rebuild your nervous system and learn how to regulate your nervous system and get it out of that fight or flight survival mode and into a more regulated state. And so that's something that I was really passionate about. And a lot of people said they really understood that after my talk.
That's incredible. And that's powerful, isn't it? And then what about the impact? Have you felt an impact from having done the TED talk? What difference has it made for you?
Yeah, look, I think it's an important milestone that I wanted to hit. And I think certainly it's almost like with something like a TEDx talk, it's almost like how other people perceive it. So when you put it in your bio or you put it on your website, people will often see that you've done a TED talk and be quite impressed by that. So it's definitely something that, you know, from an outside point of view, particularly if you're wanting to do more speaking like I am now, people see that as something that, you know, if you're a good enough speaker to be put on a TEDx program, then you must be good enough to come into a workplace to give a talk on, you know, on preventing burnout or on, you know, resilience or things like that. So it's definitely, for my purposes, it was definitely worthwhile.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's been the feedback and the response has been really positive.
Yeah, incredible. So what has surprised you the most about it though, as you move through this?
I mean, what surprised me was, you know, which happens with a lot of things, the actual process of actually doing it when you're on stage, it just seemed to only last a couple of minutes, even though it was like 16 or 17 minutes. It felt like I was only up there for a couple of minutes. Like it really just flew by.
Yeah.
And it just, the whole experience just flashed by. And so that is one thing. You put a lot of effort into it. There's a lot of, you know, in the lead up and the preamble and all the practicing, but the actual day and the actual, when you're up on stage, it goes by, you know, almost before you know it, you're off stage. And yeah, so that was something that it was, so you want to really enjoy it. And I think one of the things watching it back, you know, I didn't watch it back for a while. I wanted to just let it sit and not be too critical, but I have watched it back and there are some things that I would do differently, mainly in the presentation style.
Okay.
And one of the things that I would do is more pausing.
Yeah. Letting things land.
And letting it land. Often we're so keen to get to the next point. You know, we make an important point and then we think, right, that bit's done. Let's move on to the next bit. But you need to let it sink in with the audience.
Yeah.
You need to let them think, oh, right, I get that. And then move on to the next part. And the other lesson that I learned from doing some sessions with my son, who's the actor, is, and you probably already know this, is about, you know, mapping the emotions of a talk. So mapping, how do you want the audience, because this is what actors do with a script, they map the emotion that they're trying to get the audience to feel.
Yes.
So if they're wanting the audience to feel happy or sad, they will just physically write on the script this part, happy, sad, angry. And then that way you can embody those feelings and those emotions in your presentation because of the way the brain works, the audience sees that. I think I would have done more of the emotion mapping.
Yes.
In terms of the presenting side of things, even though it was there in the content, there were some sort of happy moments and sad moments, but I would have focused more on that in the presenting of it.
Yeah, it's interesting. We have a technique and a strategy called creating the mic drop, which everyone says they want a mic drop, that's why we use it, but it's actually nothing to do with the mic drop. Because when you experience a mic drop moment, what do you experience? It's a visceral reaction, isn't it? It's like a whole of body visceral reaction. So we actually, before we start any content with anyone, and this is going to include the TED process that we're taking people through, we actually identify what is the emotional state you want to leave people in, right? And so that is, and we make it a normalization. So you have to bring it back to one or two words. It cannot be this paragraph describing an emotion. It's like you want them happy, empowered, bulletproof, scared, like, you know, validated, whatever it might be. And then the whole build is to actually deliver that emotional response at the end.
That sounds so good. And I think that's the thing, like you can't load audiences with a whole lot of different emotions and feelings and, you know, in a short talk particularly, because even though you want to take them on a bit of a journey, and I think that's the other thing, you know, content-wise, I was very happy with the fact I sort of had that story arc and I was taking them on a journey. That's something I learned from watching the really good TED Talks that they did. They took the audience on a journey. They started here and then they ended up here, and they're like, they said to the audience, I'm going to take you with me so that, you know, you don't end up, you know, where I was.
Yeah.
I'm going to teach you how I did it. So I really liked that aspect of it. But having one central emotion that you want the audience to be left with is a great idea. And I guess that's one of the learnings for me, that I'm moving from wanting to leave the audience feeling informed and educated to motivated and inspired.
Yeah. And it's that activation element that I think we need. And that's what emotional mapping brings. People don't change anything unless you actually tap into their emotions. And so I love that fact. And I'm actually almost jealous that you have a son with NIDA experience. How useful as a speaker.
He's fantastic. He's taught me a lot. And one of the things that I'm prioritizing is also, I've got a YouTube channel.
Yes.
That I put a lot of videos up on, and I was happy with how they looked, but that they were still very much the sort of reporter talking to the audience.
Wow.
And so through my sessions with my son, Toby, he's really, and he made me just do each line and then we'd stop and then we'd do the line again. And so he was directing me and we'd just record it and then edit it all together. And it seemed stilted and it seemed slow.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see it on camera, it just appears deliberate.
Yes.
And thoughtful.
Yes, and considered and certain.
And considered. And so that's been a real revelation in terms of, you know, slowing the pace down, really thinking about vocal variety as well. You know, I turned on a webinar that I'd signed up to the other day and just had it on in the background in the kitchen. And I had to actually turn it off because while it was an interesting content, her voice was all the same the whole time. And it really made you switch off.
Yeah, it does.
So finding that vocal variety is something that I've really learned and I'm really practicing and really focusing on in my presentations and on my YouTube channel as well.
Do you think also too, because I have worked with broadcast journalists making that switch to keynote speaking before, and they transition to MC work really fast and easily, but not so easily to keynote speaking. It's because that, I think it's the way I usually describe it is it's a shift from narrating to immersing, right? So as a broadcast journalist, you're narrating, and as a speaker, you have to immerse people and transport them to somewhere different. So do you think some of that, you know, discovering the importance of emotional mapping, discovering the importance of vocal variety, do you think that's because your journalistic background is actually quite structured? Do you think that's where that comes from?
Yes, definitely. And I think, you know, your voice and your physical way of presenting, you know, if you've been doing something for as long as I did, which was like more than 20 years as a broadcast journalist, you know, even when I was on TV news, you get into habits with your voice.
Yes.
And so we'd have coaching to try to undo some of those habits. But this is an even bigger shift. It's an even bigger shift because you're trying to undo 20 years of habits and really learn how to speak again and learn how to present in a completely different way. So the more open you can be to it, though, and realize that there's nothing wrong with the way that I was doing it, nothing wrong with the way that, you know, journalists do it, but to really engage with the audience, you need to have that sense of connection.
Yeah.
And you need to feel like that you're just speaking to that one person in the audience. And you do that through, you know, the emotional mapping, but also through pauses and through being much more deliberate with your words.
Yes.
And almost sort of picking, as if you're picking each word and for a very specific reason.
Yeah.
And that's quite different to sort of the journalistic sort of TV news type of approach.
I know one of my major roles as a coach is I will literally change word by word. I will change a word or two words and people will say, what? And then when we run through, it's like, oh, I understand it. And it's also quite often, how the hell did that make such a difference? It's like literally, but that is one of the things that I've picked up on is that every single word matters. And, you know, the more deliberate we get. And then I felt validated myself one time when I read Jerry Springer's book and he talked about he can take months over one or two words to get them right. Or his stand-up comedy. Now, he is a global standard of stand-up comedy. Let's be honest, it's not the local open mic night. But I just went, okay, so this, it does matter to get this right. It does matter, you know. And then other things like Martin Luther King's speech was written 13 times before he delivered it. And the I Have a Dream was ad-libbed at the end. You know, Hitler had 27 script writers writing his speeches. Right. And they all worked on one speech at a time. It wasn't 27. They all worked on one speech at a time. So that's for good and for evil, Martin Luther King and Hitler, but they all labored over each and every word. Right. So it's as you build this craft, this is the way that we actually need to build it because it's word by word and that engagement, that emotional mapping and embodiment. Like I say to people, sometimes you can't quite get the gravitas into the words. So embody it so people can feel it.
Mm. You need to embody that emotion so that the audience can see it and feel it. And that's something that I've learned as well, because as a TV news journalist, you're not about trying to elicit emotions in the audience. You're trying to just deliver facts.
Yeah.
And so that's why that leap comes in.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to ask a quick question here that's just occurred to me. With the things that you've realized and learned through this process, if you were to deliver the same speech again, what do you think would be the major difference that we would feel as an audience?
So I think I would do the emotion mapping. I would have put a lot more pauses in, a lot more vocal variety. I think the audience would come away feeling more empowered and motivated and to think about how they need to look after their own well-being so they don't end up feeling burnt out. That's what I wanted them to feel, but I think... And I think probably some of them did go away feeling that, but I think more people would go away with that view if they
kind of like that drop from head to heart.
Exactly.
It's like I understand it to, oh, I'm doing this. And
exactly.
This
I love that. That's a great analogy, Jacqueline. So I feel like the journalistic side of, you know, and a lot of people, you don't just need to be a journalist to be living up in your head. Most of us live up there most of the time. So but I guess getting out of that and getting into your heart and your body and getting people to take action and feel emotion based on what you've said, that's where the magic happens. And that only comes through training and practicing and learning the techniques that you obviously teach your people in that you're coaching, which is just so valuable.
I think it's interesting. It's the same journey as you've gone through, though, as to why I know these things, because I would go and speak. I am a CSP. There's a certain level of effort required to get to that, a certified speaking professional. But I would go and speak and I could be going really well and all of a sudden something wouldn't work because there'd be a different kind of audience member or a different kind that would less like highlight to you that there was something missing. And so it was this constant quest, which I think is never ending. I don't think I'm ever actually going to let go of it.
That's an interesting point about feedback, because one of the things with the TEDx talk that they tell you, because it's being filmed and it's primarily to put on video, even though there's a live audience, they actually say, we don't want you to interact with the audience or look at the audience. And I found that really disconcerting because it sort of goes against everything you normally do as a speaker.
Yeah.
You're not making eye contact and trying to engage the audience. So I think if I went back and did it, I'd probably, even though, you know, I knew to look at the camera and I knew to focus on the camera, I think for that feedback, I probably would have put a bit more audience interaction in terms of just, you know, checking in with the audience to get that direct feedback.
Yeah.
Which I think it lifts you as a speaker when you get that direct feedback.
So also too, actually really funny story on that. So when we all went into COVID, because we're actually Professional Speakers Association, we're actually all at a conference the weekend of lockdown. Right. So that was an interesting environment to be in, watching everyone's world blow up. But it was really interesting because Lucy Bloom, who's a professional speaker, I don't know if you've come across Lucy.
Yep.
We had a lot of like just support forums and conversations going on in the months afterwards. And when we started getting paid again to speak, but virtually, she actually made this really interesting comment. She said, you know, I thrive on speaking. I come off a stage. I meet people. I love it. It's the best thing on my planet. I never thought that I could be so blessed as this. And she said, now we're on Zoom. And she said, I come off a speech and I need a nap.
Yeah. Right?
Because there's no feedback.
No feedback. So, I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I find presenting when you don't see the audience and when you're on Zoom very challenging.
Yeah.
You need to really up your level of energy, up your performance with nothing back, because you're getting nothing back whatsoever. And it really is a challenge. I also gave a talk in a nursing home just before Christmas, and that was similar as well. Like, you didn't get the normal feedback that you would get. And so it was a great example of just keep calm and carry on.
I always say to people, if you're worried about whether or not you can land your content in any audience, and this is no disrespect, but go and deliver it to an executive level room of legal, technical, engineering professional. And if they love it, and you know you can run with it. It's kind of, it's one of those, yeah. And the feedback is the interesting as well, because you've got to be careful what feedback you take on, because not all feedback that comes your way is meant for you. And most feedback is an opinion and not actually feedback.
That's really good advice. I did a corporate speaking event last year where it was a whole month immersion, and each week you got feedback from the audience, which was good. Like, I'm all up for feedback. But it's a good example of feedback is just an opinion, and then the next week you'd have a different group and they would give you different feedback.
Mm-hmm.
What I found was if you tried to change your, you know, the way you put the talk together, or, you know, the presentation style, you can sort of, you know, run around trying to please everybody and end up pleasing nobody.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
Everyone's got their different takes on things. And yeah, I think feedback is great, but if it's from the audience, but it's much better to get feedback from someone who, you know, is like you, someone who does this for a living as a presentation coach, who's used to hearing and knowing, well, what works in front of an audience, rather than thinking, oh, someone said this, I better change that just for the sake of it.
Well, what I say to the people in my world is bring everything back to me, because it may be something that I've missed. It might be something that I hear and I go, actually, you know what? We should do that. But don't action it until we've been able to brainstorm it and throw it up against a wall. So it's really interesting that you felt like that. So when you said that was a bit disconcerting, and when we opened this conversation, you said, you know, we'll talk through that lack of sort of audience interaction. How did you work through that, walk through that at the time, and what's your kind of observations looking back now at it?
I think if I had practiced the talk on a stage before doing it and practiced not looking at the audience and just focusing on the cameras, then I would have been more prepared for that experience. So I guess it's like, even though I went up on stage the day before, and, you know, which I highly recommend people do if you can get on the actual stage you're going to be talking on. But there was no one in the room. So, and there was, you know, it was bright lights, and it wasn't like the room was dark and everything like that. So I think in hindsight, it would have been good to get up on a stage with people and practice giving a talk where you're not really engaging
looking
with people. But having said that, I think it would have been good just to, you know, every now and then just glance at the audience and get a bit of a smile here and there, just so that you can get that feedback and keep going. But it is an unusual experience, because it is quite different to what happens with most talks, when you do interact with the audience a lot and you're always asking them questions and, you know, raise your hand if this or that, and, you know, getting them to be engaged and involved. And so that's how the TEDx talk differs in a little from your average talk.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you think people can best prepare for that?
I think just actually doing it. So getting up on a stage and practicing, you know, giving a talk, focusing more on the cameras rather than the audience, so that when you actually do it, you're used to it and you're used to being able to look at the camera like this, and then, you know, not too much, because you obviously want to focus on the camera, but, you know, finding that balance between focusing on the camera, which will, you know, mean that you're looking at the audience who are watching it back
on
at home.
YouTube, yeah.
It goes on the YouTube channel, but still engaging a little bit with the audience as well.
Yeah, incredible. Sophia, I could speak to you all day long. We're going to have to actually wrap this one out. So I'm going to just close with three quick questions, if that's okay with you. And the first one is, and you kind of covered a lot of this, so I think if we can just bring it in summary format, what do you think is the greatest improvement in your skills from doing this?
The greatest improvement in my skill is probably looking at where the gaps were. You know, I'm always open to thinking about how can I be better. I was really happy with the content. I wouldn't have written anything different in terms of my TEDx talk. But the biggest improvement was understanding that I wanted more training in the art of presenting, the art of being a presenter, and the performative aspect that goes with that.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a very specific level, your set of skills that, you know, you don't necessarily have, that the performance aspect.
Yeah.
And that involves, you know, understanding a lot more about body language, understanding a lot more about vocal variety. And so I've been focused on that since giving the TED talk. So it was a great learning experience for me in a lot of ways.
Incredible. And what about for you? What are your favorite TED talks?
So, I mean, my favorite TED talks, I love Brené Brown, like so many other people.
Yeah.
One of the things I really like about her talk about the power of vulnerability is it's really funny.
Yes.
You know, she's got a great sense of humor. And I think if you can make, which is something that I don't think is one of my strengths. So I guess I really like that talk because A, I love the topic.
Yes.
You know, she's really got a great sense of humor. And so she's able to weave her own vulnerability story along with the research and pepper it with really funny moments that get the audience laughing. So I think someone like that is someone who I really admire her skill.
Yeah.
The second one that I love is Simon Sinek, who, you know, talks about, you know, leadership and, you know, the power of why. And I think, you know, he asks really good questions.
Yeah.
And he's also amazing at finding the right moments to pause in his talk to really let the concepts that he's explaining land with the audience.
Absolutely. He's also masterful in, because not everyone can ask questions well, especially in that sort of format. And I find he's masterful at that. And it's actually a skill that he's become even better at. Some of his latest presentations and speeches, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with this topic of start with why. But, you know, you can't deny the power of his speaking and facilitation. But lately, he's collided. I think it's almost like he's emotionally mapping now. And he's collided that with his ability to ask these extraordinary questions, land them, and then almost circle back and give you a way to think about them.
Yeah, so he's very, very clever, but not in a sort of, I know I have all the answers and I'm just, here I am telling you what I think. And he's got that level of, I'm on your level. And the same with Brené, you really just feel, particularly with Brené, that like she's just speaking to you.
Yeah.
She's just speaking to one person. And that's what you want the audience to feel. That's what I'm aiming with my YouTube channel now, that you get the sense that you're just speaking to that one person who's watching.
Yeah.
And they're really getting a lot out of what you're saying rather than being lectured at.
Yeah. It's about conversation. I always say it's about speaking to one person at one time on one topic, no matter where you are. And that sounds like what's actually really appealing to you with both Brené and Simon. It's that conversational, I'm in conversation with him right now. I'm watching him on YouTube with 17 million views, but I'm in conversation with him right now. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. So no, there's so many amazing TED Talks out there, but they're probably the two that I really like.
Yeah, absolutely. And so would there be another TED Talk on the horizon at any point?
Yeah, I would love to do another one, actually. Look, I probably want to really keep focusing on the training that I'm doing in the presentation and to really, you know, feel like I'm as good as I can possibly be. But I would love to do one. I'm writing a lot about the power of connection.
Yes.
Particularly as we've got this sort of epidemic of loneliness at the moment. And so that's something I think that's something that a lot of people would find interesting.
Yes.
And it would be, you know, something that is a little bit different to my previous TED talk. So, yeah, who knows? You never know. Never say never. And if I got the opportunity, I would definitely jump at it again.
Well, there you go. And the power of connection is something that I think is a beautiful way to end this. Sophia, it has been amazing connecting with you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Jacqueline.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Speaker Driven Business. And if you have, I'd love you to do two things for me. Number one, subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. And number two, leave a review so other people can find and enjoy the content we share. Online, you can find us on Instagram and connect with me personally on LinkedIn. Just head to anygiventuesday.com.au and you will find all the connection points there. Speaker Driven Business is the show making speaking-driven strategies accessible to everyone, and I am honored you tuned in.